Hello and welcome to RTE Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast with me, Aoife Nic Cormac. In this episode, I'll be talking to composer and accordion player Josephine Marsh. Born in London but raised in County Clare, where she still lives, Josephine Marsh is very well known as a fine accordion player, but also as a composer of many brilliant tunes, including the hugely popular Phyllis's Birthday. In 2020, she was named Cumadóir na Bliana, Composer of the Year at Gradam Ceoil TG Cahir, an honour which was richly deserved. She's just published a new book of her compositions, which is called Josephine Marsh 111 Original Irish Music Compositions. And as well as transcriptions of the tunes, it contains the stories behind them. I visited Josephine recently in her home in County Clare, and I asked her first why she settled on the number 111 for the book.
I initially had, I suppose, 110, and a friend of mine, the woman Ciara Malone, that did the cover of the book for me, the photography, she said, she suggested that 111 was a good angel number, a good omen. So I said I'd write a tune for her. So that's how that happened.
You know, in a way, like a collection like this could be viewed as a sort of a musical autobiography because it charts its way through your whole life, you know, people you've met, places you've been, experiences you've had. Is that how you see it?
Well, you know what? That only kind of came to mind about 2 weeks ago. Somebody else said that to me and I thought, you know what? That's a really good way of looking at that because I suppose some of the tunes have been recorded on various albums over the years, starting in, I suppose, I think it was 1990 with Sarah O'Donoghue. The first one that I wrote was The Nurse's Helmet. So that was back in 1990. So with Cyril O'Donoghue on that cassette we made, one of those ancient things, to meet a friend. So like 30 tunes or so would have been recorded in various albums over the years then after that. And I think on the last CD, I think I might have had 9 or 10 or something like that in the last one. So yeah, so it's over the course of a few years now.
So I've always known, I'm pretty sure most people know you as a musician from Clare. So I was surprised. I didn't know you were born in London. Tell me about that and about your parents and how you came back to County Clare then.
But yeah, I was born in London to Irish parents, Phyllis O'Connor. She was from Duleek, County Meath, and Paddy Marsh from Broadford. And they met in London. So when I was 4 years of age, we moved back to my father's home place in East Clare in Broadford. And they did up the house a bit there. And that's where we resided. But my mother's whole family moved to London back in the, I suppose, you know, early 60s maybe. And so the dances were going on in the Gaelty Moor and all the rest of it. My mother's brother was Kate O'Connor. He was a nice accordion player. And she always talked about Kate. And her sister Mona then married Roger Sherlock, the flute player from Sligo. So I would have always heard the stories, you know, and all the tales about all the musicians in London, like Raymond Rowland and Martin Burns and Joe Leary and all these, you know. So I was very familiar with all that scene.
Your dad played as well, I think, did he?
My dad played a bit, yeah, he did, yeah. I think when he was younger, he probably played a lot more on the melodeon, etc. But I never actually heard him play melodeon. But he used to pick up the accordion every so often if I asked him. And he played an old clapped out concertina that had about 8 buttons on it, but we squashed some paper in and made artificial buttons. But yeah, and he had a lovely little style, you know, he kind of had a sort of one row system going on. So he showed me my first few tunes on the one row, I would say. And then when I went to national school, there was a lovely accordion player there. She was in my brother Noel's class, Miriam Carroll. And she would have played a lot with Mary and Josie Nugent. In competitions like the Fly, etc. So she showed me how to play the outside row on the accordion. So that kind of got me started in the, you know, the more chromatic system.
Mm-hmm. the accordion is your main instrument, say, but you have lots of instruments and you can turn your hand to a good few instruments, and there are tunes in the collection, you know, which are sort of written on other instruments or designed for other instruments. Do you write on the accordion? Do you write for the others? And how does it change the tune depending on what instrument you're kind of playing around on?
That's a good question. And I suppose mainly I would have written on the accordion, but I suppose, you know, when I was kind of adding to the collection, I kind of just was looking at it from different perspectives. And I would take down the mandolin sometimes and see, could I write a nice planxty on that, you know, something that would be akin to the harp, you know, the sound of the harp. So whatever's around, you know, I just would see, you know, could something happen on that. So I wrote a tune for Patsy Henley, a 4-part reel, and I wrote it on the whistle. This is actually quite a funny story. So I wanted to kind of, you know, have a whistle player or a flute player's take on it. And I was happy with it. It was in the key of G, so sent it to Patsy, and I met Patsy, and we played it together in the Bellbridge a few years ago, and he said, "Oh, I took down the accordion and I learned it in the accordion." So I thought, after all that,
I could have
written it on the accordion, but it would have been a different tune, you know, it wouldn't have been the same feeling, you know. So I suppose the answer is I would write in different instruments. There's two lovely ladies down from Moon Kine, or that direction, that play with a friend of ours, Jerry Madden. And I know that they like my music because Jerry tells me they play some of my tunes when they get together, you know. And I said, you know, I'll write a tune for them. So I wrote one on the concertina, a little hornpipe for them.
There's a banjo tune as well in the collection. I'm trying to remember the title of it.
The Smashing Reel. I think I was kind of happy with that one when I named it.
Smashing as in, like, brilliant, as opposed to broken.
That's right. Well, I wouldn't say it was brilliant now, but I was happy with it. But I suppose I had Angelina Carberry and maybe John Carty in mind, that kind of, you know, that sort of style, maybe styles of banjo playing.
You mentioned national school. A lot of people, you know, I think, who come to traditional music, especially if it's not in the house, you know, they can be very fortunate by who they get teaching them in national school, because so much music is passed on in primary schools. But after that, then, would you have had a teacher, say, going through secondary school, or would you have gone to summer schools, or what kept you at it sort of in those early years?
Well, for me, I was very fortunate. I know my parents tried to find somebody for a long time. There was no teachers, really. I know we had Vincent Griffin in Broadford, and he taught the fiddle, but there was actually nobody around that we knew of teaching accordion, so I had to wait for a while. And I never actually had a formal accordion teacher, so except for Miriam Carolyn Broadford and my dad, you know. So I never actually went to accordion classes. I didn't go to classes at the summer school here in Milltown, because there weren't any accordion classes back then. I went to a whistle class, and that was the only class I had at the Winnie Clancy. I had one year of whistle. But again, very fortunate. Yeah, we had a fantastic headmaster in Broadford. He was mad for music, and he sang every day. And more especially, I suppose, you know, on the board, he would have, you know, the scale, and he'd get us to kind of sing various notes in the scale. So we'd be hopping from do to so to whatever. So oral training was what I kind of developed very, very well from there. So eventually, anyway, after about 4 years of kind of not having a teacher, Deirdre O'Brien Vaughan came to the neighbouring village of Callaghan's Mills. And so from then on, I made friends with kids from there. And Sean Maloney was the father of Siobhan Kelly, Siobhan Maloney and John Maloney and Norma. And we developed a group. We had a group and a Kelly band, and he brought us everywhere around the country. So it was kind of, we learned in the session, we learned anywhere we could, like a lot of kids my age, you know. So that was an informal training, but the best training you could get, really.
It's amazing, though, isn't it? Those people in your childhood or your, you know, early teenage years who take you on that way, and you know, the encouragement that they give, that's invaluable.
That's it. And you know, I think the friends are very important as well, because, like, I had a friend on the road, Paula O'Regan, and she was crazy for music. She was a few years older than me. She was in my brother Noel's class. But she was, you know, just maybe a quarter of a mile down the road, and she'd get a new record and we'd listen to the record. So I'd learn by ear and I'd write out the notes for Paula, and then Paula would go to, say, O'Neill's book, and she'd write out tunes for me in the ABC or whatever. So between us, we got a lot of stuff together. But just in terms of the different instruments, then, you know, going to the different sessions, I'd be looking at mandolins and whatever. And Richard Crimmins gave me a loan of a mandolin once, and I was mad about it. So that's probably why Pat plays as well now, you know.
Your brother.
My brother Pat, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think in the book I talk about my aunt's sister, Bridget, my father's older sister. She was a nun in Liverpool, and she came home one time with some sort of a banjo mandolin. So we had to have a go on that. And then a guitar. So, and when the strings broke in the guitar, it was turned into a banjo.
You mentioned records and recordings. Who would you have been listening to, you know, maybe not from the area, sort of just that you wouldn't have known, which musicians would have inspired you?
I suppose in the early days, it would have been Joe Cooley, because I know, like, my mother, you know, he used to call to the house in County Meath where she grew up to play with Kit. And so there was a few of them used to call up there, like Joe Leary and Joe Cooley and Felix Dorn. So we had a record of Joe Cooley. We didn't have too many records now in the early days. And I suppose we had Finbar Dwyer, Joe Burke. But I suppose later on, one of my musical heroes would have been Jackie Daly. Love Jackie's style. I love his pace and rhythm, you know, his ornamentation, all of that. And all the various outfits that he was in, all the different bands and groups, you know. So that would have kind of formed a lot of my youth, I suppose. And then Johnny McCarthy from Ennis. We used to go to sessions with Johnny and Michael Fitzgerald, and Johnny played at a lovely slow pace, and by the time the tune was finished, you nearly had the tune off. So I kind of learned you know, a bit from Johnny, kind of through his playing. Like,
you know, that phrase that people use about young people, especially young girls and women in sport, you know, you need to see it to be it, you know, that idea of having role models. Were there many women that you knew playing growing up?
I suppose Miriam Carroll would have been the first girl I saw playing, and she was a really good player, you know, a really good player. They used to take part in competitions, and they were, you know, we always looked up to them. And then you had the O'Dowd sisters, actually. Madeline O'Dowd and her two sisters. They lived, I think they lived in Erinacrusha, and they were strong players. They were maybe 2 or 3 years older than me. But we had, like, little concerts in Broadford, and they used to come out and play in a trio there. Accordion players, I don't think there was that many women accordion players that I can remember now.
Okay, well, we're here to talk about the book, 111, I was going to say 101, 111 original Irish music compositions. Tell me about the instinct for writing tunes. You know, where did that come from? Where did you get the ideas from, and when did you start?
Yeah, as I said earlier, I think the first tune that I wrote was the Nurse's Helmet. And I was trying to, you know, the way when you haven't written a tune before, you think, okay, maybe you should base it on some other tune that you do know, you know. So I kind of loosely based it on The Goose in the Bog, that style of tune. And after that, then, I think really instinct after that, I don't have a form for composition. I just kind of go off into a quiet room and just tinker around with different instruments, maybe, or chords, and just wait for stuff to pop in. I really don't have a formula, you know. But I know throughout the process of writing maybe the last 50 tunes, or I was trying to kind of think of different ideas for a different theme to write a tune. So I'd think of different players. So, for example, I was thinking of Mick Mulcahy one time. So I was thinking maybe I'll write a tune and see and base it around his style and see what comes out, you know. So that was something fun to do. And Dermot Byrne then as well. And as I said to you, Patsy Henley, just, you know, just write something on the whistle and see what comes out. So I was probably taking different themes, but a lot of my stuff that I have written would be kind of, you know, presents for people and that kind of thing, you know.
And tell me, do you keep a notebook or do you keep an audio sort of record of ideas or, you know, phrases or things like that? Or do you just start fresh every time?
Yeah, that's a good point as well. Yeah, my phone, you know, if I think of something, if I had no instrument with me, I'd whistle it into the phone. Yeah. Or, you know, just maybe write a little phrase and come back to it again afterwards, you know. So there's bits of paper everywhere. Mm. So I'm delighted to have it all in one place.
Yeah.
Finally.
One of your best known tunes is Phyllis's Birthday, which has been recorded by a lot of people. A lot of people come into the studio here to us and, you know, have played it over the years and all know it's your tune as well, you know, which is nice as to. Tell me about that tune and we might listen to a recording of it.
Yeah, I wrote that for my first solo CD back in the 90s, 95 or 6. And I wrote it in the key of F. So it was kind of based on, I suppose, maybe the one note system slightly. It kind of got wings after that. Then Mick McGoldrick and John McSherry recorded it in the key of G. So it was such a funny thing. One night I came into Cruises. There was a big session happening in Cruises in Ennis and everyone was playing Phyllis's Birthday in G. And I was like, oh, okay. So, and then someone said, oh, sure, Mick McGoldrick recorded it in G. So that was it. But my sister used to say to me, you know, your tune's been played at all the feshes around because my nieces used to dance. And she said, that's your tune, isn't it? I said, yeah. So it was kind of popular at the feshes, apparently.
For dancing or You've written a number of commission tunes as well. I mean, there are a few in here written for Music Network. There are others that people have asked you to write for particular events. The tune commissioned by the Rolling Wave is there, that we commissioned during the COVID-19 pandemic. Is it hard writing a tune to order, so to speak, you know, with a deadline and those kind of restrictions?
Yeah, I suppose it could be more pressurised to do something like that because, first of all, I really wouldn't want to write something very nice, you know. And I find that the slower tunes like the Waltzes and the Planxties, they take a bit more time and, you know, to get it really, really the way I want it. So there's one in particular, an Ave Breed that I wrote for that programme that we did in Collymore Abbey with the Celebrating Women and St. Bridget. And I kind of wrote that sort of quickly enough, mind you. I kind of surprised myself with that one. but I like it. It's a Planxty. And always, I suppose, you know, with the Planxties in mind and kind of Turica Carolyn somewhere in the background, you know, that sort of style. Yeah, so they can be more difficult than others, you know, to get them to kind of turn around for you in the right places.
Thank you. You have another tune here called A Happy Medium, and I think you say in the notes, because you've notes at the back of the book about all the tunes, which is nice. You know, it's nice to be able to read about them. And you say that you wrote it when you were experimenting with different styles of playing. Can you talk to me a bit about that idea? Because you're obviously not going to you're not going to suddenly write a Donegal fiddle tune, or I think so. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, I suppose, you know, in the style, it was like I kind of loosely based it on Dermot Byrne's style, but maybe with Joe Burke, maybe Finbar Dwyer in mind as well, and especially a hornpipe, because you know the hornpipes have lots of triplets and things, and I wouldn't usually kind of maybe play tunes with a lot of triplets and things like that, so I just decided to write one with maybe that kind of style in mind, you know, so that's where that came out of.
It's interesting, isn't it, making yourself work within a different framework? It puts a bit of pressure, which is nice.
Yeah, I suppose to have a theme for a while, because, you know, to change it up a small bit even, you know, and sometimes I can go through a phase of writing tunes that are quite difficult to play as well, even for me, you know, to go back and learn them again. But, and to remember then that to make some tunes maybe a bit more simple, that, you know, some of the complicated tunes are, they can be difficult sometimes to play or to learn, but sometimes the nicer tunes are the catchier, or the easier tunes are the catchier ones. Yeah. Like Phyllis's Birthday is an easy little tune, really.
Because that's an interesting challenge, isn't it? That you don't have to kind of find the awkward way around in a tune, like that sometimes the straightforward way through is the best.
Absolutely. And, you know, some tunes are too highfalutin that you don't want to learn them. They're too complicated.
What about Mick Kinsella is your partner, harmonica player Mick Kinsella, and there's a tune here called Mick's Mystery Tour, which adds a little bit of pizzazz to proceedings. Tell me about the story about this tune.
Okay, so this one was based on Mick and Steve Larkin and Damien Gallagher. They were invited to go to, I think it was the Point or somewhere one night to see Billy Connolly. But they didn't know where they were going. And when they got, they turned the corner and they saw the big poster of Billy. So the story was, I think, that Billy was doing his world tour series and he was going to play in the Cobblestones. So they got to meet Billy first. And then after that, they were invited to play at his 60th birthday. And I tagged along for the fun as well. So that was the mystery tour. The mystery tour was en route. So everyone was trying to guess, you know, who they were going to meet. Was it going to be Dolly Parton, Emmylou? Who was it going to be? So that was the mystery tour.
You talked about Planxty's and Carolyn there, but you know, I think every type of tune pretty much is in here. You've got polkas, waltzes, reels. Is there do you have a favourite form?
Yeah, I think it depends. I don't have any favourite really, but I'm like as I said to you, the Planxty's and the waltzes, I find kind of they'd be harder to come up with a nice one. Do you know what I mean? The jigs, no problem, you can rattle them out. So jigs and reels, I probably have more of them. They probably fill up half the book.
Yeah.
And but polkas were fun to do. Do you know, they were fun. I'd never written a polka up until a few years ago, and they turned out to be great fun. I haven't too many of those, but I'd probably have to go back and relearn them as well, but they were good fun to write them. Well, first of all, I teach music maybe 9 months of the year, the school term. And I get a lot of energy from the kids, you know. And I used to teach in the Muin Chiall in Ennis. And I wrote a fair few tunes after the classes because I'd have so much energy when they were gone, you know. And I used to find that I'd have all these ideas for tunes. So some of the earlier tunes were written 25, 30 years ago in there. Or if there was an empty room, you know, like if you had a class in between, if you were doing a summer camp or some summer school, and if there was an empty room, you know, that would be inspiration to see what pops out there. But like to keep the music going, I think it's opportunities, you know, opportunities for new development. For example, like, you know, network tours or just any collaborations that pop up during the year, or opportunities to collaborate with different people, you know.
And I think you mentioned on the Rolling Wave before, and you mentioned it in the book, that you found it hard to write music during the pandemic. Was that because of, you know, being on your own, or was it because of not being able to meet other musicians, or just the general uncertainty that was in the air at the time, or what was that?
Yeah, I think it was kind of the anxiety and the, as you say, the uncertainty of the world situation, you know. I think you have to be kind of like free in your head and in a good place to write as well. And I suppose something kind of held me back during that time, you know, from being creative. You know, other people kind of, you know, I mean, I was creative in different ways, insofar as, you know, taking pictures of clouds, and which is I like to do that kind of stuff. But to write music, I don't know, there was something sort of, it wasn't the easiest thing to do to be creative musically in that time for me.
You mentioned walking into cruises and hearing Phyllis's Birthday being played back in a different key. And, you know, the nature of tunes being played in an oral tradition is that they do get passed on. You know, a note is added, a note is taken away. The music might change, maybe not drastically, but it can change. How do you feel about that, having sent your tunes out into the world?
That's a good question. And you know what? I'm the biggest exponent of that on my own tunes, even. Okay. And even to record, you know, record the tunes for this book again, I stuck to the notes, and I would have had changed them, some of them, since I played them as well, you know. So I wouldn't have been very honest if I had played them any other way than they were in the book. But they do develop, and, you know, and that's the whole creative process, really, isn't it, you know. And like when I'm playing in a session, the tune is going to change 40 times. If we play the tune 40 times, it will be changed 40 times in some tiny way. And that's what the tradition, I suppose, is about, you know, put your own stamp on it, really.
But the nice thing then about having the book is at least your version is there. Yeah. That people can refer to. Yeah.
Yeah, the original version is there. And I, as I said, I'd probably be the first one to change them up.
Are there recordings to go? I mean, I know you've got your albums, and some of these tunes are on the albums, but are there, if people are trying to learn them, for example, from the book, are there recordings to go with the transcriptions?
Yeah, so there's a little code in the book, and if you type in the code into your browser, it'll lead you towards the 111 tunes. So I've recorded them all just once each at a medium tempo on the accordion. And so I think it's really important for people to hear them as well, because the amount of people that tell me, you know, they don't actually read music, but they learn by ear, or they learn from the ABCs. So it was really important for me as well to have all three methods of learning there.
So the staff notation, the ABCs and the audio, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I deliberately kept the ABCs separate, so you're not to confuse when people are looking at the notes, you know.
Oh, yeah, as in they're not written on the underneath the, yeah, the notes on the staves, yeah. Okay, well, look at Josephine, thank you very much. You might choose a tune for us to finish. I had asked you to pick some of your favourites. Would you choose one for us to play to finish?
Okay, a little jig maybe, the jig for the one row. I wrote this for Johnny Connolly from Connemara, the lovely melodeon player. It's a four-part jig that I wrote on the old concertina that my father had, actually. So I loosely based it on my father's style and Johnny's style. So that's my choice.
And before we go, you know, the passing on of music, you have two sons. Is there music there as well?
There's music there, yeah. The youngest boy, Andrew, plays various instruments. He plays piano and banjo and anything to do with strings, guitar. Jack is a lovely whistle player, and he played the pipes up until about the age of 16. Can still play the pipes, but chooses maybe not to play as often as he used to. So, yeah, they like it. I think Jack is learning guitar now as well.
And both feature in this book, because as we said at the start, it is like your own musical autobiography, and they feature as do many of your friends and family. So Josephine Marsh, thank you very much. Good luck with the book. It's available in Custie's Music Shop, as well as, is it available online as well?
It is, yeah, on my website, josephinemarshmusic.com, and Bandcamp.
And Bandcamp, yeah. And of course, all the CD recordings are there too. So thanks a million. We're going to finish with this tune, Jig, for the One Row. Josephine, thanks a million.
Thanks, Aoife.
Thanks for listening to RT Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast. For rights reasons, the music here is shorter than in the original broadcasts, so if you'd like to hear the full tracks, you can go to our website at rte.ie/radio1/The Rolling Wave. Until the next time, Gur Míle Maithagaí agus Slán.